You're listening to the Celestial Citizen Podcast, and I'm your host, Britt Duffy Adkins. Celestial Citizen is a space urban planning company looking to help build and shape a more equitable and just future for all of humanity as we become a space-faring society. This podcast seeks to provide an opportunity for conversation about how to be a better interplanetary citizen and responsible steward of Earth and the cosmos. By engaging the global public, providing greater access to the space industry, and amplifying a more diverse set of voices, progress in space can equate to progress on Earth. We who are bursting with stardust can become celestial citizens. Welcome to another episode of Celestial Citizen Podcast. Today, we have a special sponsored episode from our gold sponsor, Multiverse Media. We'll be discussing the upcoming film called Fortitude that was created by award-winning documentary filmmaker Torsten Hoffman. We've got the privilege of having Torsten on the show today, sharing not only his inspiration behind the film, a preview into what viewers can expect, but also how you can support its creation as well.
How do I then select what is more interesting? And for me, it is not only the information you can read in a report, it is kind of also the emotion, right? Who is giving me that sparkle in the eye? Who is really an inspiring figure?
On today's show, we are joined by Torsten Hoffman. Torsten is an award-winning documentary filmmaker who is covering emerging technologies. His previous feature documentary, Cryptopia, is on Netflix Europe, Amazon Prime, and major broadcast TV channels worldwide. Torsten and his team have filmed 80 interviews on 4 continents to cover the most interesting projects, people, and promises behind the new space economy. Fortitude can be supported on Kickstarter starting April 24th. And Torsten, it's great to have you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, super excited about this. Let's do it.
All right. So I want to start by giving people some background about the film by sharing a quick synopsis before we dive into our conversation. So here we go. Fortitude is a new documentary about the people, perils, and promises behind the emerging space industry. Sparked by humanity's unquenchable thirst for exploration, fueled by capitalism's insatiable hunger for profits, and propelled by breathtaking technological advances, a new space renaissance is emerging. Fortitude uncovers how a few influential individuals with utopian ideas and vast fortunes are forging a trillion-dollar off-world industry while inspiring millions of us back on Earth. This is the story of those who take the risks, invest the capital, and endeavor to turn science fiction into science fact. So Torsten, what inspired you to create Fortitude?
I am really fascinated by all these tech trends that are upon us. Every other month, it seems there's a new hype cycle about AI or about blockchain was my last topic. I'm not an insider like you are, but obviously watching the new space race in the last couple of years has really piqued my interest. And I think interesting bit about this industry is that everybody's focusing on the billionaires, you know, in SpaceX, but many people don't know what else is there behind it. And as I investigated, it was just fascinating. So I've been becoming a space nerd recently in the last 15, 18 months now.
Well, and I'm sure that, you know, in a lot of ways, I imagine the filmmaking process was similar to the one that you undertook with Cryptopia, but obviously, you know, very different topics, yet both still focused on really sort of future industries and things like that. What were some of the lessons learned from Cryptopia that then you were able to apply to Fortitude?
To separate the hype from the real, right? I mean, blockchain industry is famous for, you know, having a lot of hucksters and scammers in the industry. And what I learned about space is actually, you know, space is hard. People are actually building real hardware and it's difficult and you can't fake your way to orbit or whatever that saying is. And so that has been interesting. But in terms of filmmaking, you are 100% right. It is very similar. So we travel quite a bit. We learn, and I don't have a script before shooting. So I don't get paid by Netflix or someone to do exactly what they want. No, no, I'm really exploring and finding out more and then getting more introductions. And I got really good access. You've seen a list of our interviewees, and it's been quite the learning curve.
Well, and to touch on that just a little bit, as you mentioned, the list of some of the people that were interviewed for this, I mean, it definitely reads like a who's who of the space industry. You've got Neil deGrasse Tyson, Sarisha Bandla from Virgin Galactic, Dr. Camille Alin from NASA, Dr. Morba Jha, who's actually been on this podcast a couple of times from Privateer, Dylan Taylor, also been on the podcast before, and of course, of Voyager Space, Barbara Belvisi of Interstellar Lab, Mark Boggett of Seraphim, Katya Etchezarreta, who actually went to space, Jane Poynter of Space Perspective, many, many others, but that's just a few. This is probably an impossible question, but what was your favorite interview from the film?
Oh, wow. Now, that is an unfair question. I like talking to other communicators. Neil deGrasse Tyson is obviously a generational talent in terms of communicating science, and he's been very impressive, of course. But, I mean, Katya was very inspiring. I mean, she really has a fairy tale story, and she gets it across so well. I guess she does a lot of media work again, where she takes us from her McDonald's jobs to space. But so many other, I mean, these are super smart, super high achievers. So I don't think there were many disappointments in this whole process. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what was that interview process like? And, you know, you mentioned that you found that all these various leaders from the space industry were pretty open to speaking with you and lending their voice to this project. But how did you actually go about planning all the different interviews, how you would balance all the various interests and different themes right now in the space industry? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, I think these are almost two separate questions. So the one is about the filming, right? And it helps that I now have a little bit of a reputation and a global audience. My last film was broadcasted on many, many countries. So that opens doors, right? So that's easy. But also, like, partnerships are really important. Multiverse Media is a co-production partner. They've introduced us to probably a dozen, maybe, companies and projects. And then Secure World Foundation, very big in the sustainability, space sustainability part. So that was helpful. Especially those partnerships, you know, they help with getting access to policymakers like the United Nations people, White House policy person, US State Department let us film inside a building. So those type of things are not easy. Yeah, with a few introductions and a little bit of knocking on doors, it's possible.
And of course, Multiverse Media, also a sponsor of Celestial Citizen and this podcast, for which we're very appreciative as well. So you'd mentioned that you were not incredibly familiar with the space industry ahead of working on this project. What was that learning curve like? And what was the most surprising thing that you learned while making this documentary?
Yeah, I think relatively early, I don't know whether it was an interviewee or maybe a report I read. I mean, it's relatively easy to kind of structure in my head. So one segment is Earth to space, right? We are sending rockets, we're sending astronauts to space. And the next one is satellites, has been around for a long time, but of course now it's really taken off in some sense because all that data and the masses of constellations up there. But a breakthrough for me was kind of to understand, yeah, what new business models can evolve around it, and AI, for example, plays around that. And then I think the most sci-fi and futuristic part is the space stations, is the fuel depots that they're building now in space, the asteroid mining, super fascinating. I read as a kid, you know, those sci-fi novels, and now these projects are getting funded. And sorry, I think I didn't answer your earlier question about, and how do I then select what is more interesting? And for me, it is not only the information you can read in a report, it is kind of also the emotion, right? Who is giving me that sparkle in the eye? Who is really an inspiring figure?
And now a word from our gold sponsor, Multiverse Media. Award-winning filmmaker Torsten Hoffman and his team just announced their Kickstarter campaign for the upcoming documentary, Fortitude, Forging the Trillion-Dollar Space Economy. Exploring the emerging new space industry, the film delves into the people, perils, and promises of a trillion-dollar off-world industry. With 80-plus interviews across four continents, the production, which was co-produced by Multiverse Media and executive produced by Dylan Taylor, is 90% complete and seeks your support. Back the project on fortitudemovie.com. In the film synopsis, you mentioned kind of sharing with the public or trying to help the public understand what's science fiction and what is science fact. And I think probably one of the most compelling things about the space industry today is just how much of it seems like it should be science fiction, but in fact, it is actually, you know, happening, which is really amazing to see. And it appears like that was maybe one of the key themes for this film. What were some of the other key themes that you addressed and really wanted to cover in producing this documentary?
I'm very interested in business and the financial part. So what are the actual sustainable business models? So I understand there's lots of space exploration films. There's also on Netflix tons of SpaceX, I wouldn't call it propaganda, but it's like really like in-depth about what they do, right? That's perfect. I'm so curious about how this interaction between government, public, and private corporation goes. So we had some fascinating conversations. And then the other one would be China, right? China is sort of like a touchy subject. And unfortunately, we couldn't go to China to film there during COVID. And still, I don't think they're easy about it. But just kind of to learn, okay, what is the American model? What is some other models out there? And hopefully the film gets that message across that it's not one size fits all.
We talk about that a lot on the podcast here as well, is that, you know, this industry is so much more than just a couple of companies, right? There's a very broad spectrum of space companies and people working on different challenges. And so I think shining a light on that is pretty important so that people understand a little bit more about this industry as well.
Because we do talk to some of these streamers and broadcasters, and they want to dumb it down, right? And they say, oh, what is the conflict, right? What is the good guys and bad guys, the new space and old space? But I learned it's actually not like this. And hopefully I get that message across. It's not obviously not easy to summarize 80 interviews. But yeah, I think it is important to kind of be honest about it. And, you know, if five world-leading experts tell me, look, it's the wrong way to think about old space versus new space, I guess I got to take a cue from that.
Now, you had said that you did most of the filming for this during COVID. So this has been a more recent development, I guess, but over the last couple of quarters, there has been a bit of an economic downturn in particular that has impacted parts of the space industry. So I guess it probably was too early on, but when you were doing these interviews, did you sense any concerns of forthcoming slowdown from people interviewed? And how do you think this slowing down of investment might potentially impact the pace at which the space industry develops here over the next few years?
I mean, my filming wasn't really impacted. Maybe we had two or three cancellations due to COVID. Certainly China was locked down much, much further. So maybe that really wasn't the issue. I do think during the course of the filming, we had like all these space specs, right? All these billion-dollar space companies on the stock exchange, and they kind of deflated pretty quickly, right? So maybe the claims got a little bit shyer and smaller along the lines. But at the same time, I mean, it's a rapidly growing industry, right? I was just checking some facts and some figures with the UK Space Agency. And since they gave the interview just a couple months ago, there's already more jobs and more income generated for this country. And obviously, it's a worldwide industry. So yeah, I think it's still overall growing. I'm sure some startups have problems funding right now. But overall, I don't think we're stopping, right?
Just recently, I was reading Seraphim. You know, you interviewed Mark Boggett from Seraphim, but I was just reading their quarterly report over the weekend. And although they are seeing, you know, a bit of a slowdown of investment, it is still outpacing levels prior to Q4 of 2020. You know, of course, things did get really frothy in those couple of years there, at least partially fueled by that SPAC frenzy. But I do think that overall, you know, there's still very steady growth for the industry, which is, of course, good to see.
And maybe something for the audience here. I think the real money is made not by kind of speculating and basically day trading or short-term trading. But I mean, Seraphim is a long-term investor. I think they've, over the last, I don't know, 10 years, they've invested $300 million in 100 companies. Dylan Taylor is maybe one of the top three angel investors privately, and of course a corporate investor as well. And those people would tell us, look, it's about the long game, right? It's about 5-10 year cycles. Basically the same in crypto as well. Like if you try to be smarter than the market, you end up losing. But if you maybe hold Bitcoin for 10 years, that might be a good bet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But did the film address the role that policymakers might play in regulating the emerging space industry? Did you look at kind of policy as a component of the future of space?
I did, especially when it comes to space debris and space sustainability. For obvious reasons, there's international component to this. You know, it's kind of funny how the lawyers and the diplomats are maybe a little bit less interesting on camera than the builders and the entrepreneurs. But yeah, no, we covered that for sure.
You were obviously looking at, you know, kind of the economics, and you had said before the business models of these various space companies. But what about the technological landscape? So how much time in this film did you dedicate to kind of describing to the public what some of these future technologies look like and spending that time again on saying, you know, hey, this is actually fact, not just science fiction? What rough percentage would you say you kind of like focused on that within this film?
Yeah, maybe 10, 20%, something like that. So it's not a technology, it's not a science film. But, you know, on a high level, I do think it is like for a mainstream audience, it is important to maybe understand what the difference between LEO and GEO is. So we kind of have a special animation that really shows it. And one of the big GEO guys, Viasat, is explaining, you know, the pros from his side, but also obviously there's cons, or like pros and cons basically. So yeah, I guess we try to make complex topics a little bit more simple for the film, yeah.
And going back to, you know, what you had mentioned about really focusing on orbital debris and space sustainability, what kind of themes or ideas emerged? And from your perspective, how do you think the space industry can be more sustainable beyond Earth?
You know, I think, Britt, you and I are part of that solution, right? I think it's like making that problem visible or known, because, you know, plastic in the ocean, people hear about it and can see it in the river or whatever. But space is like so abstract maybe and so far away, it seems, so people don't worry about it. So I think it's my job as a documentary maker, is your job as a podcaster to kind of verbalize this. And you just mentioned you had Moriba on your show, right? And we have, I think, 14 minutes maybe dedicated to it. So we're just, I should maybe be clear about it. So we have a 90-minute target. That's roughly the feature-length version. We're sort of 80, 90% done. But the reason why we do a Kickstarter is kind of to bring it over the line. So, but roughly speaking, there's 15 minutes of content around the sustainability bit.
And yeah, why don't we talk a little bit more about the Fortitude Kickstarter campaign, you know, why you're doing it, what it's intended for, and also how listeners can support this project.
There's multiple reasons why filmmakers go to Kickstarter or other crowdfunding platforms. It's audience building, it's brand building. So I've done it 3 times now, I believe, and each time was successful, not because it gets, you know, money, but also you try to build an audience and engage with them. But this time, other than the typical rewards, which is like you get like a free download and stuff like that, this time we have a partner that actually, I mean, when I met those guys, I couldn't quite believe it. But they basically do deals with these moon missions or the ISS or like an asteroid mining company to put like a little tiny, tiny metal capsule on the moon lander or whatever space probe. And in that capsule is, for example, DNA or a microchip with data on it, right? So basically what we can offer our supporters is, well, put a photo, put a selfie, put your company logo on this microchip. It will be on the moon next year. It goes with a Falcon 9 rocket, the Firefly mission next year. So that's kind of something cool that space enthusiasts, I think, will get into. It's sort of like, I'm sure you're familiar with this Voyager, right? Was it in the 1970s, mm-hmm. that golden, the record of humanity? And Ben, the founder there, is basically saying, look, my purpose in life is to spread life to the universe. And the way he does it is with these tiny little metal capsules, and you know, maybe a few dozen or hundred people will join us. So it's relatively cheap, and they get a free download for the film as well. So win-win for everyone.
Yeah, and so how will people be able to view the film, and when? When is your intended release date?
What we want to do is we want to first do a few events, whether it's virtual events or physical events, you know, maybe at a conference in New York or in Paris or in Mountain View. There's a big one coming up later this year, Los Angeles, all these kind of space cities, not only in the US, but globally. I want to do this because with my last film, COVID really kind of stopped the world flat, and I went straight to streaming. So I want to do this first, and then we release on the big streaming platforms probably at the end of the year.
So jumping back into film and the theme at hand here, I also wanted to touch on something that the teaser alluded to, was that there was sort of this controversy or confusion from the public surrounding government funding for companies led by billionaires in the space industry. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that and what viewers could expect to see in this documentary?
Yeah, so I mean, the knee-jerk reaction from journalists or from uninformed people is like, okay, so why do the two richest people on the planet get 100 millions or billions of grants from NASA or other government agencies? But if you drill it down and you do the full cost analysis, I mean, eventually it will actually save the US taxpayers probably money, because they can now use SpaceX's rockets for cheaper than they build their own SLS and other systems. It's a bit more complicated than the headlines. Yeah, I'm just fascinated by that whole aspect of kind of commercializing LEO. Then, of course, the other aspect is, well, okay, you can give them grants, but what about the actual demand in this private space sector? And you look into under the hood, and there's actually not that much private demand. So it's mostly still government demand, which is by design. And you know what is super interesting is that in China, you would think everything is government controlled, and it's largely true. But actually, the private space entrepreneurs in China, they're kind of jealous because they don't get those government grants. It's kind of a separate system. So yeah, we'll kind of elaborate on that a little bit. I just find it so fascinating. And it seems like the Americans clearly have the winning formula, bar none. That's the number one space nation still after 60 years, right?
The U.S. definitely has, I would say, led the way in terms of commercializing their space interests. And I think that's a very interesting topic to explore. And so I'm glad that you all take a look at that in your film. It's something we talk about a lot on this podcast as well, because we hope, you know, we're able to connect to people not only in the space industry, but also outside the space industry as well. So one of the things that we often talk about, because this tends to be a very hot topic and a topic of interest, I'll ask you and get your thoughts on this, but how do you respond to people that are turned off by the idea that space is being shaped by billionaires and their commercial interests?
I mean, my answer is making fortitude and showing whatever 50 different companies that are not Elon Musk and not Bezos run. But I think going back to those events, right? I mean, maybe a 10-minute little segment to create a forum with policymakers or with, you know, high school kids or whatever is the way to do it. And again, you as a content creator do something very similar, getting that message out. And again, you can't really blame journalists. I mean, they have a tough life and they need like sexy headlines. Sometimes they don't even make the headlines themselves. It's probably ChatGPT. doing that for them. I don't know. So yeah, no, it's I think our job to be a bit more intellectually honest, let's say.
And what can you say about kind of how you view the emerging role of startups like those that you interview in this documentary? So what role do you see in the future being played by some of these, you know, more emerging startups? Some of them obviously more established, but I'm thinking like Interstellar Lab, Voyager Space, Astroscale, Orbit Fab. What kind of role do you see them playing in the space industry going forward?
Yeah, I mean, their role is to push the envelope and to take venture capital and take risks. And the big corporations that have 90,000 employees can't really do that, or the government agency can't really do that. Or what NASA told me is, well, we would really like to focus on space exploration. We want to run a space station anymore. There's, you know, Voyager and NanoRex and Axiom and all these guys. They can maybe do it better, cheaper, and more innovatively. So yeah, I think that's really the winning formula. I mean, after 2 years in this industry, I truly believe that this works. And that, you know, that doesn't mean that what the Europeans are doing is less interesting. There's tons of, you know, French and British companies that we also feature in the film. Yeah.
And where do you see the space industry evolving over the next 10, 20, 50 years?
In our headline, we say 42, forging the trillion-dollar industry, right? So I think it will eventually be a trillion-dollar industry, and it will slowly become more private demand, right? At the moment, maybe it's still a government and military driven. Even the Earth observation constellations, right, get a lot of their income from those sources. But eventually, I mean, it's sort of like a new digital infrastructure over our heads, right? And largely will be driven by private users and companies. So yeah, I truly believe that. I think there's no stopping that. And surely we'll see failures and companies going bust. We just saw a Virgin Orbit, unfortunately, close its doors, or I don't know exactly what the situation is with them. But, you know, we have 100 launch companies and 100 different ideas to do this, and some will succeed, others won't.
How do you see the emerging space industry impacting or affecting the way that we think about ourselves as humans here on Earth?
It is something very visceral, right? Or that dream to go to space that I don't think other industries really have that, right? I'm German. There's a lot of car culture, and we pride ourselves with cars. I'm personally not into it, but you don't really see that like, okay, this is my life's mission. And the space industry really has that. I think it's the job of the industry to get now these talented graduates and stop them from going to the hedge funds and to the Googles and get them into like real engineering jobs.
And what is the take-home message that you really hope viewers will walk away with from Fortitude?
that is something that shouldn't be too much on the nose about, right? So I don't want to summarize the film and this is what you should think. In fact, I should give you, you know, 100 things to think about and then you make up your own mind. In fact, I haven't even filmed the last final scene. It's going to be a long, like, walk through the space history kind of and make a few points. But it's not like me telling you what to think. It's more about, okay, this is recapping. This is where we come from. This is where we're going.
Well, I think that's a great answer to that. And, you know, I think it will be very interesting for people to view this and perhaps have different takeaway messages as a result of, you know, kind of the stories told and kind of the narrative that you all have brought together. And we discussed this a little bit earlier, but filmmakers often have to make many cuts to keep a project's message concise and on track. Were there any themes or topics that you would love to explore in a future film?
So we filmed 80 interviews, about 25 hours of content, and some of them were absolutely great. And then cutting them down, sometimes cutting down, you know, 3-hour interviews into 3 minutes or 20 seconds, it's painful, right? So we already have negotiations or conversations with platforms that say, well, this should be a miniseries, really, right? And then if we have a miniseries, we can focus a bit more. We have more astronauts. We have more, let's say, the China angle or more the policy angle, or we can double-click on some of these constellations that we really didn't have time on. Or maybe we do get SpaceX involved finally and get their view on all these smaller startups. I would love to do that, yeah. But my goal at the moment is just to bring it over the line as it is and show to people, have these events in the next couple of weeks. And then, yeah, thank you for helping me bring that message to the people.
Okay, so this is the final question of the main segment of our interview, and then we're going to go on to our lightning round. But we ask this of everyone that comes on the podcast. Celestial Citizen is all about the idea that humans can become not only better stewards of Earth, but also better interplanetary citizens. In your opinion, what is one important way in which people can work toward becoming celestial citizens today?
I will just again say, if you support the film, you can upload your DNA, physical, 1,000 copies will be made into that little metal capsule and it will be on the moon next year. I mean, that's just, I mean, spreading life. And think about it. I mean, we are today at a point where humans can already kind of recreate DNA. You know, there's a mammoth example experiment that they're doing, the sheep a couple decades ago. So imagine 100 years or 1,000 years when aliens come or when we want to kind of back up humanity, that DNA treasure trove is out there. And of course, people say, oh, my DNA, I shouldn't do that. And in my little Kickstarter video, I say, well, put your dog, right? Your little pet, like a Noah's Ark, right? Spread life out in the universe. And you always ask this question, but yeah, by supporting the film, you can actually physically do that. Yeah.
This episode of Celestial Citizen Podcast is in part sponsored by the Colorado School of Mines Space Resources Program. This first of its kind interdisciplinary program offers certificate, Master of Science, and PhD degrees for professionals around the world interested in the emerging field of extraterrestrial resources. The program focuses on developing core knowledge and design practices for effective and responsible identification, extraction, and use of resources in the solar system to enhance space exploration and enable the new space economy. To learn more about the Mines Space Resources Program, educational opportunities, and research activities, check out its webpage at space.mines.edu. Thank you again to the Colorado School of Mines Space Resources Program for your sponsorship this year. All right, now we are on to our lightning round of quick questions. You can feel free to give a brief explanation why you picked what you did, or no explanation at all and leave us in mystery. Are you ready?
Sure, let's go.
Would you rather live on the moon or Mars?
Moon, better views.
On the moon, your favorite space hobby would be what?
Basketball, something like that, jumping.
I mean, it would be a lot easier on the moon, that's for sure. Favorite book about space, fiction or nonfiction?
I was very impressed by Space Barons, one of those early history of SpaceX, and Bezos and Branson, and I think even some of the other big founders. It's so well researched. I loved it. It was a foundational piece. I don't really cover it in the film, but it was just amazing, a piece of journalism.
Yeah, I haven't read that one yet, so I'll have to check that out. If you could bring one item to space, what would it be?
So I would probably do a similar trick like the Apollo 15 pilots, they illegally put a few coins or stamps, took it around the moon and wanted to sell it back home because they said, okay, this stamp has been around. So it was like a money-making scheme. So I think I would probably come up with something like that. Oh, look at this little thing. But I'm not sure. I haven't really thought about it in detail.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Okay. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek, 100%. Such an optimistic view on humanity and space exploration. Yeah.
The Martian, Interstellar, or Contact?
All very good. The Martian, because it's maybe the most realistic, literally happening in front of our eyes right now. Yeah, love that movie.
Favorite planet or moon?
Europa, because, the Europeans here are so excited about it. And every time they drop some knowledge, it sounds very, it's like the frontier of what we're doing in the solar system. I love it.
Yeah, Europa is very cool. I will say that. I'm actually reading Alien Oceans right now, which is really interesting and talks about all the moons in our solar system. So very cool.
I want to mention something that, so in my interview process, I met this organization called Astro Access. Maybe you heard about them. So basically it's about on Earth, planet Earth, disabled people. And actually, some of these disabilities might actually become a super ability in space and zero gravity. And the lady who's one of the ambassadors and who went to one of those zero G flights explained her journey. Yeah, I mean, it's this interesting field of study. I mean, there's so much to say about it. I just love that. And it just occurred to me because she said, well, lunar gravity was so much fun when we were in that parabolic flight. And that's why I got my basketball answer earlier.
Oh, nice. We've actually had folks from Astro Access on the podcast before. AJ Link is also a good friend and co-creator with us often here on Celestial Citizen as well. And he's been co-host of Continuum podcast that we do as well.
It's one of those organizations that are supported by like many of those big billionaires and big corporations, similar to Space for Humanity, another one that's in the film and I'm sure you're familiar with. So it's not only about, billionaires getting richer. There's a lot of inspiring organizations that are actually doing work and getting support from the whole ecosystem. Sorry, I interrupted your whole flow there. I'm sorry.
No, mentioning Astro Access and Space for Humanity is always a good reason to interrupt flow. So no worries. Permanently grounded on Earth or a one-way trip to Mars?
Permanently here.
Something most people don't know about you?
I do a lot of work in virtual reality and the metaverse, and probably I'm going to do a film about this whole ecosystem and emerging technology and immersive worlds at some point.
Oh, very cool. Will humans ever live beyond our solar system?
Yes.
And let's say you get the opportunity to live off Earth temporarily. Would you rather live underground, like in a lunar lava tube, on the surface of the moon, or in an orbiting space station?
Yeah, I was inspired by the High Frontier, the work by those early pioneers saying that it makes more sense to kind of be in a free floater, free floating stations, rather than on another body that is just another gravity well. So yeah, my non-technical answer would be that.
And let's say you're sent on a long duration mission. What's more important, choosing your crew, choosing the food, or choosing the destination?
The crew. Assuming you're not sleeping in deep sleep.
Oh, that's true. Actually, that's a good point. No one's ever brought that up before. But yeah, that would probably change my answer to that question as well.
To food.
I'm consistently surprised, though, by how much people are not concerned about the destination. I think that shows me that people are generally pretty happy to go anywhere in space, which is pretty interesting. But all right, finish this sentence. In 50 years, we'll all be what?
Cyborgs. I mean, sort of are, right? We have these things in our ears already and I don't know, pacemakers.
Yeah, it's true. It's not a far off guess, I think. We would also like to extend a big thank you to another silver sponsor, Explore Mars. Explore Mars was founded to advance the goal of establishing a human presence on Mars, starting no later than the 2030s. The Humans to Mars Summit is the largest annual conference focused on achieving this goal. Humans to Mars features senior leadership and experts from NASA, private industry, academia, STEM, international space agencies, the entertainment industry, and the innovation sector, with hundreds of attendees and tens of thousands viewing the event online. To learn more about Explore Mars and the Humans to Mars Summit, visit exploremars.org. Thanks again for your sponsorship of Celestial Citizen this year. Torsten, thank you so much for joining Celestial Citizen podcast and sharing more about your upcoming film, Fortitude. I'm sure I speak for a lot of listeners when I say that I'm very eager for this documentary to be released and to check it out. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Britt. Thanks, everybody. And yeah, check out fortitudemovie.com or the trailer. We're going to be on the socials in the next couple of weeks. Thank you. Thanks again.
3, 2, 1. We have liftoff. A vehicular little ship, my supersonic ship's at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Alright. We'll go travel faster than light. That little Elon Musk will be left in the dust, so alright. Say alright!
And to our community of Celestial Citizens, thank you so much for tuning in to this sponsored episode of Celestial Citizen Podcast. This episode would not be possible without the terrific work of this show's editor, Victor Figueroa. Thank you, Victor. Also, a very special thank you to Graham Clark, who created the amazing intro and outro music for this podcast. If you're interested in learning more about Celestial Citizen, and I hope you are, then check out celestialcitizen.com. You can also follow along on Twitter at Celestial Citizen and Instagram at The Celestial Citizen. And be sure to sign up for Continuum, our newsletter on Substack. You can find the link to all of these things on our website.
Let me take you on a little trip. My supersonic ship's at your disposal if you feel so inclined. Alright. Nobody's gonna travel second class. There'll be equality and no suppression of minorities. Well, alright.
If you're interested in supporting the mission of Celestial Citizen, you can always reach out to learn more about opportunities to sponsor or become a patron of this podcast. A major component of Celestial Citizen is feedback and public participation. We want to hear what you have to say, so let us know what you think about humanity's future in space and what it should look like. Please share your voice and your unique perspective on social media. Or if you prefer, all of the Celestial Citizen articles can also be found on Medium. So drop a comment and join the conversation. If you love today's podcast, please have your friends and family subscribe on whatever device or platform you listen to podcasts on and leave a stellar review so others can get hooked as well. That's all for now, Celestial Citizens. I'll be back next week for another episode. In the meantime, don't be afraid to take up space.